Welcome to the Audio Equipment Podcast. My name is Griffin Brashears, an audio engineer obsessed with uncovering the stories behind the tools used to shape the musical landscape of the past, present, and future. Today I'll be joined by Artemy Pavlov, better known as Sine Vibes. Based in Ukraine, Sine Vibes produces audio software at the intersection of rich analog-inspired sound and digital possibility. Known both for their array of desktop plugins and their embedded software for synth platforms from companies such as Korg and Dreadbox, Sine Vibes is a vessel for Artemy's restless creativity and drive to put out musical tools that sound great and feel great to use. I'm curious about your background in music. Do you play music or perform music? How did you kind of get started in music in general?
Well, my family, you know, my mom and dad and my sister, who's older than me, they were always like into music. And my father specifically, he actually owned a company that manufactured amplifiers and speakers and did installations in various like nightclubs in our hometown. So, and basically, from a very early age, I hung around his company office and manufacturing and everything. So I literally, like, as a young boy, I saw these, you know, people soldering and working with printed circuits, and everything was made by hand back then, because it was like late 80s, early 90s. So I kind of, I was brought up as a, you know, as a boy, like literally living inside audio technology and music and stuff like that. So it naturally came from there. And, you know, we had a record collection at home, both on vinyl and on tape and so on and so on. But I started to become more and more interested in this stuff. And because I had access to very high quality audio equipment at home, so
yeah, great place to start.
Like, yeah, I was like, I think 14 or 15, and we had these giant JBL reference monitors. And two separate tube amps to drive those. High-end class, so that was kind of the sound. That was my default.
Like, you just, you know, got used to. So I just like
that was normal to me. So, and growing up with this as normal, with this, you know, resolution and fidelity and just the liveliness of the whole thing, you know, that was kind of my upbringing. So I went through listening pretty much to everything, and I like basically all music that's, you know, pleasant to listen to and not annoying. So not something that's too pop or not something that's just too heavy and loud, basically. And everything else, just, you know, I would listen to, it doesn't matter. I could list pretty much everything.
A lot of ways to ice the cake. Yeah.
Just not primitive and not too like crazy loud and, you know.
Yeah.
But the list would just be too long. So I cannot say I have a specific preference to any music style, I would say.
Yeah.
It's just, it has to be good art, I would say.
Yeah.
That, good art, good production.
Yeah.
Something that meant a lot to the people that made it.
Totally.
I would put it like that. So, I did start as a kind of hobby producer, because I was really interested in synths. I think it was somewhere around 1994, 1995, when my dad bought me first Yamaha synth.
Classics,
which was like one of those that allowed you to actually kind of learn how to play. I don't mean like a DX7 or anything.
It was a little bit more of
Because I had no idea how sounds are synthesized, actually. So that was a good start to actually try to see, you know, what sounds can come out of a single instrument. That was fascinating to me, that a synthesizer could produce almost any sound. Not because a guitar is a guitar, you know, drums are drums, and so forth.
Yeah, kind of like more like a rompler in some ways. But
a
like,
synth appeared to me as some kind of a magical instrument which could do anything. And that was really fascinating to me. So interesting, as I look at bands that I listened to in that period, I wanted to be more like a lead guitarist, because they usually get this spotlight.
Yeah, but I mean, always the guitar.
But I was more interested in keyboards. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so that kind of that was a very gradual process of me going through multiple like yearly synth upgrades.
Totally. So once the addiction starts, it never really lets go.
And my parents were really supportive in this regard, and I really appreciate it. So the I would say the pivotal point was when I obviously in parallel I actually had access to things like Alesis Quadriverb. These kind of things, you know, digital effects, rec units.
I still love those to this day.
My dad owned quite a few of those because they were doing like live concert support with these and his equipment.
Yeah.
So I've learned very early how to operate those and like do my own presets. And even I even used the Quadriverb as a sampler, because it allowed you to sample.
Yeah, yeah. As sample.
No, there was a program called Sample or Sampler, which would give you like 1.7 seconds or like less than 2 seconds of sampling.
Pretty generous for the era that it came from for the budget.
I don't remember if it was 2 seconds stereo or 2 mono. Doesn't matter. But you could actually hook up a MIDI keyboard and play it chromatically.
So it had like some sort of like rudimentary time stretching?
No. I don't think it even had like any high quality interpolation or anything like that. It was pretty primitive, but
probably
still
crunchy. Yeah, but it was a
free sampler, you know.
Yeah.
So I was really dreaming about some more advanced keyboards, and for a period of time, I had the Roland XP80 with a few expansion boards, which really kind of allowed me to not only learn synthesis in a very powerful way, because it's such a pretty flexible instrument in that regard, and I had access to a few expansion boards which kind of showed me the different taste of different sample library producers. One of them, for instance, one of these cards was Asia, which was produced by Spectrasonics.
Yeah,
and I think it was coming from the Heart of Asia library they did, and that was like, I don't know, it was like switching from full HD to 4K.
Yeah,
essentially.
Yeah,
such an amazing, such a detailed leap, recording of all instruments and percussion. So, yeah, and then I got into I used a lot of keyboards after that, which offered sampling, more effects, and so on and so on. And at a certain point, I started actually selling sounds for those, because I was just training myself to do sound design. So basically, like I think a year or two after graduating my university, I was already doing some online business selling sound libraries. So, and I felt like, no, I don't want to do anything else.
Yeah.
So, kind of long story short, I've never been employed by anyone, like, in my entire life.
Awesome.
So, I've been self-employed, like, my entire life, basically. So,
it's
anyway,
great that you found your groove
It was a very good thing that I was able to kind of start earning money very quickly after graduating.
Yeah.
So, I felt like I'm running out of the power of the hardware. So I, with the money I earned, I got a Mac. My first Mac was, I think it was the first Intel iMac
that
released. Yeah, that was an amazing machine.
Yeah. That was a
surprising. Yeah, surprisingly still works.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. And I really got into software. But 2-3 years after using software synths and effects that I would, you know, buy, I figured, you know what? My background is math. My background is physics. And I'm so like into sound design. I like just almost like getting in this meditative state, doing sounds and producing some bits of music. Like I probably can do this, you know, not in a way that, you know, Native Instruments and Isotope were doing when I was using their software back in those days. But still, like, let's see what happens.
Yeah, dip the
and
toes.
Yeah,
in.
Yeah, something did happen, and it still keeps happening. It still keeps
Sign
happening.
Vibes was born. Is so, Sign yeah, Vibes yeah. your first company that that you did the
first,
plugins
I,
with?
Yeah, that was the first brand. Yeah, my first plugins came under the brand already. So it
awesome.
It hasn't ever
just
changed.
Been going, yeah.
So when I was doing sound libraries, I think I changed my brand name like once in 3 months.
yeah, that's how it goes. Eventually, you settle on ridiculous. One that people just keep calling you that, and then you can't get
I
away
think,
from
yeah,
it.
Back in those days, sound webs kind of sounded super cool to me. I
it still does.
That.
I think it's. I mean, that's
and to me, like name. The sine wave is the foundation of everything.
Oh yeah.
So my idea was that. I'm kind of trying to start from the fundamentals, like and actually not by coincidence, but the first product that I did was a sine-based wave shaper. So actually having sine in the brand name was also relating to
also
one of the first
of the
algorithms.
Yeah,
one of the first algorithms that I developed was actually based on. All based on sine waves. And actually, that was one of the first algorithms that I ever licensed to another company, which was Spectrasonics. So they actually, those very first experience I did ended up in the Omnisphere.
Yeah.
So that was pretty amazing. That was, yeah, that was kind of the first major acknowledgement, I guess, for me. And I was,
it was really pretty amazing to jump into it.
A very nice kick
and get...
to move forward. Like, oh, wait a second.
Yeah.
I'm doing something that, you know,
is acknowledged by Spectrasonics.
Kind of funny. I mentioned Spectrasonics earlier with their Asia board, but I was kind of so we kind of came like full circle, I guess. Which was really amazing. You know, getting connected, getting an email from a person who you've admired like for maybe 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah.
Prior to that, and not even thinking that that would ever happen.
Yeah, it's an incredible feeling. I hope people, everywhere, whatever their path is, get the opportunity to experience that kind of feeling. I've had similar situations doing audio engineering that has been like, you know, it's encouraging, you know.
Definitely. Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh yeah, maybe this isn't a totally impractical path to follow, you know.
Yeah. So I realized that I actually did not full answer your question because you asked about producing music. I did actually produce quite a lot of music, but I've never released it. I've never properly recorded it. But I think
just
I had
purely for the soul.
close to 30 tracks that I did on the Roland XP80, Roland Phantom S, those machines. We actually had like a little Roland community back in the day, which I founded, and we actually used to release a CD with community music once.
Oh, that's awesome!
So that I would say that's the only place where that music was featured.
It's gonna be collectors.
So, but yeah, it was mainly for personal, you know, enjoyment. Yeah. I was, of course, when I was like 19, 20, 21, I was really hoping that. some label would you know sign me, and I was sending my CDs and MP3s to yeah. various places. But the internet was so so slow back in those days, and communication yeah. was really slow and difficult.
Different world.
So I just didn't get a chance to really find a label that would kind of say, oh, let's record your stuff in higher quality, let's try this out, and so on and so on. So, but by the time I got some good equipment, I actually became less and less interested in music production, but went into yeah. sound design, and then went into, you know, software design. So, but totally, just kinda, like yeah, I said,
the,
you know,
the slow, I'm kind of, yeah, I feel like yeah, synthesis yeah, is kind of like that in a lot of ways, where like as you get more, sometimes you become like less productive over time, unless it is like either a full or a part time like occupation, almost in some ways. Yeah, of course, there's always the tinkering, right?
Of course,
yeah. Always.
No, I actually wrote 2 full tracks in the past 3 years.
There you go.
On my yeah yeah.
I want to hear some of your material, like, just to, you know, outside of this.
Yeah, podcast, but it's all very different to the stuff that I wrote back in the days, like 20 years ago. Yeah. That stuff was way more like melodic, mm-hmm. way more composed, as opposed to writing the stuff that I did, which was more like programmed and. Recorded, I would say, because yeah. I mainly used the Electron Digitact, which I really love.
Oh, those are great units, yeah.
I've sampled like at least 30 different synths and into it, which I own and make my own sounds with. So I have like a giant collection of sounds made from like both like analog and digital instruments, my own drums, and so on and so on.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah.
And my music is being made from the sounds that I made from scratch, and so on and so on. So it takes a lot of time.
Yeah,
and
I mean, it's pointless,
but
it's like when you're really baking bread, you know, it's like you're actually milling the grain to bake the bread. Yeah. You're kind of doing the musical
but there's,
equivalent.
There's yeah. that. Yeah, there's this anecdote with you know about the drums.
Yeah.
So when. One guy was, you know, two drummers meet, and one of them is asking, you know, how's your music going? And he said, you know what, I was playing drums, and I figured that using the drums that everybody can buy is just kind of not great. So I decided to make my own drums.
Yeah.
So he started buying wood to make the drums. But then he said, "You know what? I'm using the wood that I'm buying. I should probably grow my own wood."
Yeah.
So he started growing trees to make the wood for drums. And then he said, "Then I figured I'm using animal skin on the drums that I'm buying, and that's kind of like cheating. So I should have a goat, you know, buy some goats,
yeah.
grow goats, and have my own animal skin." And, you know, so long and so forth. So the guy's asking, so are you making any music? He said, I have no time because I have this goat farm
yeah.
to take care of. That's kind of...
Yeah, I feel like you're definitely living the a real life equivalent in some ways, you know. With
I know quite a few people that went that route.
Yeah.
Quite a few major people in the industry came the same way. They were... you know, fiddling with music production and sound design, then they said, oh, I want to do my own stuff to make my own stuff to make my own stuff.
Yeah.
So that I've, all this stuff is mine.
It's a big rabbit hole to fall
and
down.
Then,
yeah.
like, yeah, you end up, you know, at the very end of this thing, but the beginning is already like, ah.
Yeah.
Forget
this
exactly.
music. Exactly. Yeah. It's just a different expression of
but
passion
you
from the
do,
same source.
Yeah. We do enjoy actually when we find out about some really even like Grammy winning stuff that was made with the plugins we make.
It's probably amazing.
When I say we, I mean like the different plugin makers.
Yeah,
that's insane because like for instance, 3 years ago, a masterclass with Elangelo dropped on mixed with the masters. Mm-hmm. And he was using 3 different Sinus plugins on his productions with The Weeknd, including a couple effects he kept using on all his vocal tracks.
Yeah.
So, and I was like, oh my God. So,
yeah.
So I'm trying to listen more carefully to The Weeknd's albums.
Yeah, try to pick
now.
Out.
Pick out like, oh, whoa, that must have been that one.
Yeah.
So, and that's kind of, which is, I mean, honestly, it's not too good. You kind of stop listening to the whole song.
Stop, tunnel vision.
You know, trying to take it apart.
Yeah.
Which is not really great. But still, you know, it's an amazing moment. I think, you start to think of yourself in a bigger way.
Yeah.
So, I took part in a music production in that capacity, not as being the author of it or the producer.
Of course, yeah.
But there I was, kind of played a certain part
there's a level
in
of
that
pride,
music
yeah.
production. So in a way, kind of...
Created the tools that were used for the job.
Some music is being produced with my participation in some way.
I think quite a bit of it, you know? It's amazing to think of the scope, because Stein Vibes is successful. You know, there's... Stuff's everywhere.
Thank you, sir. Yeah,
of course.
That's good. No, yeah. Yeah, and not only in the plugin form, but also, with the stuff we did together with Dreadbox, with the Typhon, which is becoming like a very popular instrument. It's become quite a big thing, I would say.
Yeah, how did that collaboration start, do you think?
It was also kind of interesting because I was a user of one of their instruments for a couple of years, and I really fell in love with it. And I've done a lot of DSP development while using that instrument, the Nix semi-modular synth, as my main sound source, so to speak. So I was kind of literally using their sound to develop my DSP and test it, because the Nix has such a huge sonic range, like from really sparkling highs when you overmodulate things to like a booming low end. It's a really great source to test, let's say, delays and reverbs and, you know, modulation effects to make sure they don't like explode in the low end because they have feedback. Yeah. So basically, we got acquainted, I think it was 2018 at the Superbooth, and then we met again a year later without any communication, you know, during that year.
Yeah.
But it appears that Yannis, one of the founders of Dreadbox, he was actually researching my stuff, you know, in that year.
Yeah.
And he literally like jumped into the Quark booth where I was, showing my stuff with like sparkling eyes. And I was like, listen, I have some stuff we need to work on. So,
and
that was pretty much it. Yeah. So, so in a way, kind of our stuff was already working well together. So when we started to integrate the first effects into the Typhon, their engineers were like, listen, we were not even like fine-tuning anything. We're just taking whatever you
send
us with the settings you told us to use, and it works. So in the end, they used all the DSP. They were made like 100% untouched.
Wow, so, amazing. Super elegant. Yeah,
really
I guess
great.
It really pays off when you kind of tune it as you go to their thing, and they're like, oh, we can actually just notch this in with this set of ranges.
Yeah, I can say that the DSP only works with the Dreadbox sound.
Yeah.
But once again, because of the super wide range of the frequencies that that analog synth can produce, it can be pretty untamed, you know, very peaky resonance or very smooth sound. Like very powerful subs or very like sparkling. I even synthesized like hi-hats and noises with it.
Yeah.
So
super versatile.
It was and it was great that I was familiar with what they do, because I also helped define the feature set of the Typhon in some ways. So, you know, there are certain features in it that I really insisted they have, because I felt like they define the, you know, they are the defining features of the Dreadbox sound, I would say.
Things that spoke to you that you really felt like.
I felt like that stuff is one of the things that I've never heard on any other instruments from other manufacturers. So that should be in that synth, like 100%.
Yeah.
So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then as far as, you know, you've written some software as well for some of the Korg instruments as well. How did that collaboration kind of come to fruition?
Well, just to note, it's not anything that that Korg is including as part of the actual firmware on the instruments, but some of the listeners might know, some might not know it, but there's a line of Korg instruments that supports plugins. They have their own SDK, so you have to code the plugins specifically using that SDK.
For their parameters,
it's not like you can load any VST
or OD
units. Yeah, and it's a fairly basic platform, but in the second generation, it's no longer a pretty basic platform. It's quite more
expanded quite a bit. Yeah.
5 years ago, when they announced it, was it 5 years? I think it was earlier. I think it was 2018 when they announced the Prologue, the first instrument in the series. And as soon as I, like, literally the day it was announced, they also announced that there will be an open source SDK for developing oscillator and effect plugins. And like this, the very same day, I actually messaged them.
The light bulb went on. Yeah, right away.
I replied on Twitter, like, we are super interested in this. So, and fast forward to like half a year, maybe 9 months from that point, I had the Prologue at home, and I started to fiddle with coding some stuff for it. So, from 2018 to 2019, from Superbooth in year 18 to 19, I actually developed three oscillator plugins. And the third one was actually introduced at Superbooth together with Korg on their stand, which was quite nice. That was already when that platform was becoming like something people talked about.
Yeah.
So. I guess it was a very nice collaboration between Sineweb's and Korg, because Korg used Sineweb's plugins as a way to show what that platform can do.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's, I was really happy that they kind of pushed my brand. Because it was, you know, I retweet what they. Yeah, I repost what they post and they repost.
Big push, yeah.
So we kind of, went kind of like it was a positive feedback loop, I would say. Yeah, and I think for me it was super exciting because I've always dreamt of running my DSP on hardware. And that was before the Typhon happened.
Yeah.
So the Typhon was released a year after that. So, and actually the experience of coding plugins for the Korg architecture really helped also do stuff for the Typhon, because I knew how to minimize, you know, CPU load.
Yeah.
And, you know,
you'd worked on some of the efficiency balance.
Strip down the code to use less memory, to use less, you know, CPU resources and so forth. So that was also helping in the end. But yeah, the Korg, the whole story with the Korg plugins, I don't think there is... a very big brand would not be interested in doing that stuff because the user base cannot be as big as, you know, on Mac and Windows.
Yeah.
Where you potentially have like hundreds of thousands
nearly,
of customers.
Yeah, the largest market. Yeah.
Not here. So, but for a small brand like Sineweb's, the sales that we got initially were quite okay. And later on, when Korg released a couple more models in that line that supported the same plugins. And these models were more affordable. By the time those went on sale, people could already get like 6, 7, 8 different Synrus plugins. And fast forward to today, we have 28.
Oh, wow.
So that's quite a lot. We actually have more Cork plugins than desktop plugins.
I noticed that, yeah.
A bit of a shame, but the Cork plugins are just way easier to do because they have no user interface.
Yeah, a lot of that's kind of
the DSP is way more basic. They take more time to actually kind of optimize and code to be able to run on these simple CPUs. But
do you think kind of programming for like say desktop versus embedded? Do you think that like you have to get a little bit more creative with some of the embedded solutions compared to desktop, or do you think that
you have to come up with tricks, you know, on the desktop? Is like luxury,
I was about to say, on the flip side, do you feel when you are, maybe there's a kind of the anecdote of Brian Eno when he was like composing the Windows 95 startup sound, he was like, I was living in this world of microseconds for so long that when I went back to composing full-length pieces of music, it was like, oh, I can do way too much. It was like almost daunting. Do you feel like sometimes you have that kind of like dilation going from embedded and then maybe working on a desktop, you know, plugin?
Most definitely, but I've never done like DSP that can go way too hard in the CPU anyway. Mostly because every concept for a plugin is always kind of a a very specific effect that does very specific things.
Totally.
But I would say it's kind of it's refreshing to go from desktop to Korg and backwards, because you kind of learn something from downsizing. And then you kind of feel freedom when going back to desktop. Oh, we can do way much more on desktop. So it's a very, I would say it's kind of...
You learn from both.
It's a very interesting, exactly. So, but Korg does have a new platform that they've started to ship to customers. It's the new NTS1 Mark II and NTS3 that's coming later this year, I hope.
Amazing.
And those machines run way better CPUs, way faster RAM and a little bit more of that RAM. So I'm kind of working on some ports of the Synrus plugins at the moment, and I'm actually able to take the desktop code and
That's
only minimally modified, so because let's have your favorite, one of your favorites, the Albedo, for example. On the desktop platform, we have up to 64 grains in stereo with interpolation and dual envelopes for each grain. So we can have adjustable speed, the tuning between the grains. We can go from forwards to reverse playback smoothly. When I started to work on the version of Albedo for the first generation of the Korg instruments, I really had to scale it down so that, you know, we can have a decent amount of grains, so it sounds sort of like a cloud reverb.
Yeah.
But the specs were much more basic. So there was a single window envelope, which means we couldn't switch from forward and reverse playback in real time. Grain size could not be adjusted smoothly. Grain readout could not be interpolated. So we ended up with 16 fixed grains, essentially, and several sets of fixed grains to choose from small to, you know, from short to... long.
Yeah, so you made a little bit of a compromise.
But
there.
It was 16 monophonic grains, which are pretty basic. But still, like, for that thing
for that
to exist
hardware with
in a tiny hardware instrument, that was mind-blowing.
That's beefy.
Many people, and actually, Albedo on Korg is the best-selling Sonos product of the past 5 years.
It's flashy.
So
it's a flashy, you know, proposition. Yeah.
Even though compared to the desktop version, it's just not as, you know, huge. But having it in hardware,
yeah, being
huge.
Able to go on as stage part of your instruments,
as one of dozens other effects.
Yeah,
and especially with the freeze function, it's really great because it's a nice performance tool. So you can place something in, freeze it, then actually switch to a different sound in real time.
Yeah,
and start playing it on top without affecting what's being played by the effect, and then kind of blend that in, again freeze it, switch to another one. So it's a very, I would say, if you're doing some, it's kind of a, you know, blend between a looper and a granular effect. So you can actually kind of compose ambient music on the fly with it, which is very cool.
And also, but again, of hardware, yeah, it's the kind of
when I started, when I got the new Korg NTS models like a month ago, I was like, okay, let's push it to the extreme, like straight away, because I need to know the boundaries to actually come up with a product line that has products which can work together. I cannot have a crazy granular reverb when it takes like 50% of CPU and you actually want to run other stuff on it. So I have to balance stuff. And I was surprised that I was able to run the blend chorus with 4 stereo voices.
Wow, that is extremely impressive.
And
that's powerful.
3 instances of albedo with 16 stereo grains, interpolation, and dual envelopes straight from the desktop.
All at the same time.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I was like,
so
wow,
you're cooking with gas with that one.
This is like this is, you know, a huge step above. And Korg is claiming the CPU speed is only 3.5 times faster, but it's a different chip.
Yeah.
The RAM is much faster, so accessing
you can hold things
RAM,
in memory for much.
We can do more memory access calls, which means that we can run more grains. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the CPU might only be 3.5 times faster, but I'm guessing it actually is able to do more instructions per clock.
Yeah, is it the same chipset as far as, or you said it's a different chipset, so is it going from like one version of ARM to a different, or is it
Yeah, exactly. From the Cortex M4 to the M7.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's a big leap.
I would say it's at least overall it's probably like 6 to 8 times faster, like if you factor in both the CPU and RAM.
Yeah, probably like more code shortcuts.
So, which is a lot. It's a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I'm so excited I cannot do anything, to be honest, because I want to do everything at once.
Yeah, you're paralyzed really, by possibility.
We made 3 ports of effects to show at Superbooth with Korg, which went really smoothly. So, but it's gonna be, I would say, if we had like 20% of the desktop sound and features, not the sound, I would say 20% of the features of the desktop plugins on the old platform, on the new one, we will have from 80 to 100%. So some of the plugins, I would say, would probably be able to be exact copies of the desktop stuff without any like compromises.
That'll be amazing.
Which is really amazing. And I mean, if you hold the NTS1 is pretty much like an iPhone.
Yeah, it's teensy.
And NTS3 is like it's more like a square shape. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much the size of the like the Fujifilm square.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Photograph. Mm-hmm. So in the hand, it feels like a Game Boy something. It's amazing.
Yeah, technology is exciting to see that like so much is about like not just the power but the usability. Like the folks over at Korg are just very thoughtful engineers. You know, they make very
fun
tools.
We're actually as they're completing the NTS3, I was really surprised that they opened up the device on the device completely. So and it's not fiddly to use. What I'm saying is that I initially thought that you would use the computer editor to actually like assign effects.
Yeah.
And I'll map the parameters
common
and so on.
A lot of hardware sense.
Because I looked at it and I thought that, you know, it's going to be way too complicated on the device. But then they said, I actually noticed that they did implement all that on the device as well.
Oh, wow.
And I was really surprised. And their engineers that I met at Superbooth, they confirmed that, yeah, we just decided to do it. So that was really great because, you know, it goes to show that they are really trying to make the thing as usable as possible without the computer. So, and actually, you can actually save your preset setups on the device as well. So the editor is just kind of complementary.
If you want memory for that, or if you want to have like a much larger tool.
You can actually like, I think the only thing the editor can do that the device cannot do is it lets you save your setup as files to your computer. So you can kind of back up your whole device or share presets with friends and, you know, or have different sets, different collections of your effects presets for different live gigs and so on.
Yeah, super useful in its own way, you know, for that kind of workflow. But having it all on the device is pretty compelling.
But those machines are really, really powerful now, and they sound way better in every way, you know, compared to the old ones. Yeah. And especially, the USB-C part is also very welcome because I was able to power the NTS3 from my iPhone 15 with the USB-C port.
So the portability is going to be... Amazing.
Yeah, so like you don't even need the power bank if your phone is with you and you just want to take this like as like it's the new fidget spinner.
Just
take it with a USB cable.
I'm loving the rise of portability in synthesis. I first started to notice it like with, I would say, like larger scale products instead of just like, you know, things that are more oriented as like, you know, toys, which don't get me wrong. I do love the form factor of like, you know, the more like toy like instruments like the like Pocket Operator series, the original Pocket Operator series from, you know, Teenage Engineering. But seeing like Akai, you know, with the MPC-1, you know, the Live and Live 2 with the battery and the speaker, it's like having a whole DAW on the go and in full hardware form factor is like a like unthinkable proposition. You know, compared to, you know, when I was starting to produce and make music in like the early 2000s, you know, it was like Cool Edit Pro for the heavy lifting. And then, you know, like, you know, hardware samplers were so much more capable, but they were very much not portable, you know, and you wouldn't want them to
be
because
they were
so
expensive.
You wouldn't want to take an MPC to the beach, you know.
For sure.
But nowadays, it's amazing what hardware companies are able to, you know, just it's like they're it's a win on both fronts. It's like they're both getting so much more powerful, but also they're really emphasizing the joy of hardware, which is that they're fun, they're interactive in ways that, you know, software can be for sure, but usually the benefit of hardware is that you can really get your hands on it and literally start configuring it with in a shapeable way, as opposed to, I feel like, interfacing with a screen is just a different feeling, one that I like but it's a it's a different feeling.
Yeah, for sure.
As far as new software, what do you have kind of in the pipeline? You said you just did some announcements for some of the new software for the NTS1 and NTS3.
Yeah.
Platforms.
So yeah, I would say there's a lot of stuff that's planned, and we kind of have four. I would say kind of topics that we're trying to push one after another, like in a loop. Mm-hmm. So we have new desktop plugins that we want to make, like all new stuff. We have, you know, around 10, 12 maybe titles that were discontinued a few years ago, and we want to bring them back to life in the new cross-platform format.
I saw that, yeah, Linux support coming soon for everything.
Yeah, so so and then there's that. Yeah. We're adding Linux support to the titles that we started to release as our cross-platform desktop plugin line. Mm-hmm. I imagine like we should be also starting to build Windows ARM 64 versions.
Yeah,
as I expect, you know, maybe Bitwig is going to jump on ARM64 Windows laptops pretty soon. Mm-hmm. So, and at the same time, we have Linux on ARM64 working on some hardware now, supporting plugins.
Oh, wow.
Because there's a couple, there were a couple of companies presenting Eurorack modules with a Linux plugin support at Superbooth. And I was like, oh, we have to add that as well.
The light bulb went on.
Oh, my God. Yeah, then on the Korg side, there's still a lot of stuff planned for the first generation platform. I mean, the NTS1.
Yeah, you're just dipping your toes in to start.
Yeah, so and then there's a plugin called Flare, which is an additive synthesis oscillator that we're working on. It will first be released for the older generation devices, and then there's the whole collection of plugins for the Korg instruments and effects boxes that is going to be that we will be porting to the NTS1 Mark II and NTS3. Mm-hmm. So it's like I even forgot what I started with when I began answering your question.
Just started
so
with
I would say like all of that. All of that.
So many
check,
projects.
Check.
Remember to find some times to sleep and relax.
Yeah. So it's difficult to actually arrange the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, to be kind of to be done in a timely manner so that our customers can expect certain things to happen.
Yeah, you don't have to
on
do
a regular
any
basis.
Deadline announcements and then
we actually have some ideas for effects which are only possible in new Korg effects because of the CPU and RAM speed gains. So yeah.
Exciting
Busy summer for you. So it's I would say it's so much to think of that I get tired just thinking about I would say I'm kind of living in this mode where I work like crazy for 2 weeks and then I just spend 2 weeks walking in the forest or in a park.
Oh, nice. Wonderful.
Just like
good refresh.
Trying to plan the next 2 weeks after that.
Totally.
So I cannot seem to balance just a single day.
No.
Into
no way.
This thing. Either I'm kind of working a lot just because I'm like I found this, you know, I'm riding this wave. So until the product is done, because there's a lot of stuff to do. You know, the user manual. You know, the presentation for the website, the videos, and so on and so on. So that has to be done while you know the idea of the product is still in my RAM, but once it's released, like a few days later, the RAM is almost like clear.
Yeah.
So,
then you can
and
walk
yeah
in
yeah.
The forest,
then I kind of have
de-stress.
To okay. What's next? So, I would say yeah. There's always a big list of things that are top priority, and just when one of them just feels right to do like today, that's when it starts.
Totally.
So I would say the next release will probably be the Flare oscillator and perhaps a few of the effects that we've pretty much completed porting to the NTS1 Mark II, NTS3. So, and we'd like to kind of formally announce our commitment to bring these effects to these new Korgs, because we have a very big customer base on the previous generation of devices, and they're kind of waiting to to perhaps upgrade to the newer machines, but they want to be sure that this Steinvibes plugins that they've invested into will be coming to those machines as well.
Makes sense.
So we have huge support from our Korg users. Like it's amazing. I would say the interaction and communication with our hardware focused user base is like beyond anything I've seen when we were only doing the desktop plugins.
It's a community, so, you know, people.
Which is pretty amazing. Yeah,
that's fantastic. Well, I think that just about wraps up the interview portion. Thank you so much for your time and you know, sharing so many insights into what you do and why you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for the conversation. Yeah, it's really it's been a huge pleasure. And kind of going through all of the things that happened in the past like 20-25 years.
Yeah, I know. It's made like me I feel got the really really great of it. So, yeah. Awesome. Yeah, I mean you've accomplished a lot and you know your stuff is beloved worldwide, you know.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Of course. Yeah. Kind words. Thank you.